BFF with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
We're all grateful to the amazing Jenny Green, who is back tomorrow at 3 with Radio Bonkers and the best tunes. It's Thursday, the 26th of November. That's Thanksgiving in the States. Here, it's Toy Show Eve. This is game on.
I can hear the excitement in your voice. First time in 12 years, I haven't had a single person ask me for a ticket. Anyway, for obvious reasons. Between now and 7 o'clock, Diego Maradona's agent is with us to remember his time in Napoli as the rest of us continue to process his passing.
He was magnificent, but off the pitch, he wasn't able to manage that.
And he got caught up in all sorts of messy stuff, didn't he, while he was there?
He wouldn't be staying in much in prime time there. Or anything else.
James Downey joins us as Andy Farrell freshens up his Irish team to face Georgia.
This is an opportunity for us to try and grow our pool. We're obviously a small playing pool, and with a small playing pool, you're always one or two inches away from a crisis. So this is an opportunity for us to gain some experience in a few different areas and make sure that we build for the future.
Also for us, it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without Jeff Shepherd. You can expect plenty of discussion about food. And Conan Byrne runs the rule as well as Dundalk prepare for their latest European night.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, Damien O'Mara and myself, Donico Callaghan, bringing you all the way up to the fantastic Terrace Court at 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552, or we'd love to hear from you by tweet at Game On 2FM. Damien, how are we doing?
I'm not too bad. Do you know, come here, people are sick of us talking about empty stadia and how different life is, and there are far more important things in the world. I've had two experiences within the past 10 days or so, which I've kind of stopped and went, God, this really is different from how life was before. So the first one was, I was in Croke Park last Sunday week Meath against Kildare.
Lucky and man.
Been at a few matches, and I've kind of come to terms with the fact that there's no one there. And then you go to Croke Park, and you can literally hear the players on the far side of the pitch talking to each other.
Yeah.
But the one that has really hit me, and I was going to talk about this tomorrow night, but seeing as you brought up the toy show, normally today, like, this campus would be hopping, and then tomorrow it's like a creche in here tomorrow, and Ryan is the ringmaster, and it's so strange to be around the place. And I walk through the TV building, and the same energy and excitement and vitality and everything that normally exists on the eve of the toy show isn't around the place, and I'm a little bit sad.
But it is in your house, surely. My kids are hopping. They're sitting down, ready to go. They've the plan for the night, how we're going to watch it, what the treats are going to be, making their lists after it for Santa.
There's probably promise of a takeaway tomorrow night. I've insisted. I've told the wife we're getting a takeaway. It's a toy show tonight. There's a bit of that. And then my eldest, who is 8, nearly 9, is very, very excited that it's, spoiler alert, Roald Dahl is the team, which if you've been online or you would have been on social media with Ryan earlier, you would know that, and if I've ruined it for you, I apologise.
He's going to be the fantastic Mr. Fox. If you were to be a Roald Dahl character, what are you going with?
Well, I was going to say you'd be an Oompa Loompa, but...
fair enough, shots are fired. Yeah. You'd be a twit.
Oh...
Sorry, Damien.
That's fair enough. Very harsh. We won't fall out over this.
Exactly.
Come here, loads going on. We're going to chat shortly to James Downey about the rugby 9 changes. We're going to hear from John Smith, who had the enviable task of being part of Maradona's inner circle. He was his agent for quite some time. But a big, big day down in Cork today. Plenty of business around the Cork GAA community. And one would perhaps think the green shoots of growth and development for Cork GAA launched today.
Absolutely. A new commercial programme put in place to generate over 20 million, which is an ambitious ask. I think the idea of it, Damien, one Cork, so it's basically alignment of all the existing organisations. And I think that can happen when you get, the stadiums and county boards, everyone can kind of work in different silos. But this sounds... like as if there's a coming together. And look, I think we'll all know it in sports, if things aren't right off the pitch, you can't push on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be used as an excuse, but I think actually commercial entities are really important within sport now, and I think having things right off the pitch really do matter to transcending on it. Like, I just look at our I don't mean to be looking back at our own time, but since Munster won in 2008, you look at the teams that have gone on to win, and the, you know, they're teams that, you know, Leinster may be outside of it, but they're teams with deep pockets, you know. So it's something you have to have right now, and it's good that Cork are lining it up and getting everything in place, and hopefully it transforms onto the pitch, because you need a few big days, Eamon, like you mentioned.
Well, sorry, I've had plenty of them in Dublin, but, you know, you lads down in the real capital. Well. Come here, sorry, there's obviously something in the coffee up here tonight. So, yeah, this is going to amalgamate the Cork County Board, the Porky Cueve Stadium Board, and the fundraising arm down in Cork, which is Corja Corky. And, see, I suppose the headline figure in all of this is a €33 million debt that exists, and obviously there was significant funds pumped into the stadium. But you look at what the financial stuff has done around Dublin, and it's brought it on to another level. And like you said, if you can bring everyone together, and rather than have one body competing with another body, if everyone can point in the one direction. And you look at it, I've yet to be in Porky Cueve, but I know, like, I think we're Westlife meant to be down there this year, and that got panned.
Times.
Was it?
Yeah, five concerts.
Five?
And my house is just up the way, so you could hear it if the wind was blowing in a certain way.
God help you.
What do you mean?
Sorry. Yeah. Five nights.
Five nights.
That means Nicky Byrne would have played in Porky Cueve more this year than some legendary Cork inter-county stars.
That was the slagging about Ed Sheeran, wasn't it? That he'd played more there at times there than the Cork hurlers.
Yeah, well, there you go. Fair point, well made. But I suppose if you look at it, there's so much of an ability there, not just for you know, the commercial side of things in terms of concerts and whatever else, but the conferencing facilities and all that sort of stuff. So I suppose if they can all pull it together in the one direction, we wish them well. Come here, let's be honest. The GAA needs certain counties to be strong, and Cork are firmly one of those counties.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it'll open a can of worms. People will have different views on it. So 51552, but even small things for me, Damien, and when it comes to naming rights to stadiums, you know,
how would you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. I really am. I think there's tradition and history to some places, but you have to, like we say, you have to bring in revenue, and that's really important. So,
it's inevitable at some stage, one would imagine, that Thomond Park will not be Thomond Park.
Yeah.
And that's not going to sit well with a lot of people.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I can't believe it's not Butter. If they could sponsor it and call it, I can't believe it's not Thomond. Yeah. That's a good tie for me.
But that said, people, you know, the history around Lansdowne Road, people, okay, they might not be comfortable with a big corporate entity having the naming rights, but I think people have got used to it, and you don't hear that many people refer to it as Lansdowne Road anymore.
No. Well, there was fines at the start for the players, so they quickly
was
got
there?
Out of it.
Yeah, how just
much? Oh, a little rap on the knuckles if you got it wrong. And to be fair, you hit players in the pocket, and I'm telling you, it'll always change their mindset.
There you go. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to chat rugby. As mentioned, the Ireland squad named today to face Georgia in Sunday's Autumn Nations Cup game at the Aviva Stadium. First start at international level for Billy Burns. 9 changes to the starting 15 from the side that played England last week. Jacob Stockdale at fullback, Hugo Keenan, Keith Earls on the wings, Chris Farrell joined by Stuart McCluskey in the centre, Burns and Conor Murray at halfback, front row of Finlay Beelam, Rob Herring, Andrew Porter, Ian Henderson and the captain James Ryan in the second row, and the back row, Tig Byrne, Will Connors, CJ Stander. The subs, Dave Heffernan, Keane Healy, John Ryan, Quinn Roo, Peter O'Mahony, Kieran Marmy and Ross Byrne, and a potential debut for Shane Daly. James Downey is with us. Before we bring James in, Donica, your thoughts, are you surprised at 9 changes?
I like it. I like what he's doing. I think Andy Farrelly is arming himself with a real big squad now. And Damien, the thing for me is coaches so much talk, they always talk about strength and depth. We've used strength and depth, and they pick the same 23. And James Downey knows about him better than anyone else, and it's probably not a bad point to bring him in. But if you really want to have a competitive squad, you got to give him game time, and he's certainly doing that. James, how are you?
Donica, Damien, how are we?
We're great. We're interested in your take on this team, James, and I'd probably start with you. I won't throw you into the deep end with Finlay Beelam playing on the loose head, but Stuart McCluskey in the centre, 2 years out of international rugby, this is a great opportunity for him.
No, it certainly is, and I was going to mention that point, that this is only going to be his fourth cap, you know, and he's done the business for Ulster in the past couple of years, and whatever it's been, that Ireland have got some quality centres there at the moment, and it just doesn't seem to get a chance or an opportunity, and this is a great one for him, you know. I'm highly impressed with him. I love the way he plays. Like, he's similar a bit to Chris Farrell, but I just think he's he got something else about him as well, you know, and it's quite surprising. But like two big midfielders you have there with Chris Farrell beside him at the weekend, so it's going to be an interesting one that. But there's plenty across the board. Like even I have spruced up in a bit of prop work now.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. It's all about chasing the feet.
You're not wrong.
No, but Finlay Beelam's an interesting one going across with Ed Byrne out, you know. Andrew Porter gets a bit of a break on the tight head. I don't know if you call it a break pushing over to tight head, but it's a more natural position, I think. And you're looking for strength and depth. You mentioned it there, Dunica, that Finlay, they have to have a look at who else can cover. If you're looking at World Cups, if that's how far you're going, you're looking at squad numbers. And you are looking to have, if someone drops out, if there's injuries, you've got to have guys who are playing at the highest level week in, week out, and aren't just thrown in for one-off caps. Even with your Billy Burns, I think Billy's done extremely well up in Ulster, and again, he's just been kind of, I suppose, unlucky that people outside of Ulster don't think see how good Billy Burns has been and how much he controls things and how much they respect him up there. And I think out of sight, out of mind sometimes up there, you know. But no, it's an interesting side. I'm delighted to see Shane Daly on the bench and hopefully and presume he'll come on and get a cap, and it's well deserved. Conor Murray coming back in. Conor's been under a bit of pressure too, and I think Jemison Gibson Park has brought an extra dimension to things and the pace he brings. So Conor's under a bit of pressure, and this might be a chance for Conor to not play his normal game of kind of controlling things, being the box kicker, just to have a bit of a crack, you know, have a bit of a go at the breakdown, speed of ball, focus on his passing a good bit more. But a more open game we should expect this weekend.
James, a load of valid points. Just one there, Shane Daly playing at, likely to make his first cap off the bench. I think it's brilliant for the AIL that there's a player like Shane coming through. He's been brilliant for Cork on, and I know with your time with Clontarf, you would have seen him an awful lot, but just for the league, it's important that players can step up and see the pathway there.
Yeah, massively so. I think Shane Daly was it last year or the year before, was playing in the final for Cork on, you know, and these players do need that pathway, and they do need to say that it's not just into an academy, it's you're actually going to get that opportunity to play and play Pro 14, play European games. And if you do that and if you step up, that the opportunity is going to be there. And I think if you're looking from a Munster perspective, done okay, you've got the likes of Craig Casey, who again has come through the underage system, who's plays AIL and now is stepping up, and he's been given an opportunity with Conor away. This is great game time for him. And you want to see more of it. And you see it through Leinster the whole time, that all these young players are playing and they are getting the opportunity. And Harry Burns, another one who potentially himself and Craig could have popped up and could have even played, you know, but they've got to cut their teeth in that, on that Leinster side and that Munster side, and then play a bit of European as well. But it is, the pathway's there, and it's great for those AIL clubs to see that there still is an opportunity, because it's such an important conveyor belt of talent that's in the AIL, and you don't want to lose those players playing that because they don't see an opportunity if they miss out the first time round.
Just a word as well on the optics. The easy thing to do would have been to kind of spin a yarn around last week was a relative disaster for the squad, and you throw the same lads out and let them redeem themselves. He's obviously decided to go with 9 changes. To look at some of the stats that are doing the rounds, Andy Farrell is still to break double figures in terms of games as the Irish head coach. He's capped 40 players. Daly, if he plays at the weekend, which presumably he will become the 10th debutant in this calendar year. What message does that send, James, to players who are still at the provinces in terms of the opportunities that are available and the opportunities that are available to go, say, from the Pro 14 to the international setup much quicker than we might have expected in recent years?
Yeah, and I think that's got to be the case, Damien. I think it's if you're playing well enough, like you should be picked regardless of age, regardless of anything. And you look at the, like you hate kind of going down under to Australia, New Zealand, but like if you're good enough, you're old enough, you know. And if guys are producing it and showing that form for their province, they deserve to be given the chance. And not just once, you know, they have to be given 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 goes, you know. It's got to be able to compete at that level. You can't just throw someone in one game and say, oh, we'll judge him off that. The international level is a step up, massively so, and they have to get accustomed to it. They have to get used to it. So To see all these young guys being capped, I think is great personally, you know, and it's great that lads do have that opportunity. And it just makes them even hungrier that when they have a chance with their province, if a bigger name per se is missing, that they have that opportunity to step up and really be in the firing line for Andy Farrell's squad.
But Donica, it does kind of have the look of something that's been carefully planned, or maybe I'm being overly generous, because we've heard on too many occasions in the past about, you know, the importance of November as a springboard into the Six Nations or world rankings for, you know, World Cup seedings and all this sort of stuff. That obviously the plan has been made here that the Six Nations is out of the way. Let's rip this up and have a look at where we're at.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, James, you made a good point there that I hadn't even thought about. Finlay Beelum actually playing at Loosehead. If you're travelling with a squad of 30 to next Rugby World Cup, you're going to need guys to do different things in certain games. It won't always be the case. You'll never get stress tests like that in the Six Nations, but you do at Rugby World Cup, and you require players to play in different positions. And this weekend, we're playing two players in different positions, Finlay Beelum and Tadhg Byrne at six. And I think if you're looking at a World Cup, that's what you do. But normally, we don't actually practice that until we get out there. So, I don't know about you, James, but I, as a player, I'd play for Andy Farrell. I think he's got the players back. There is a bit of a negative vibe around the camp at the moment, but I think he's a guy that he has the backing of his whole squad, and they want to play for him.
Yeah, and that's massive, I think, as well. And I think it's been great to have a change of voice for the players. I think they became a bit stale under Joe at the end, and just everyone knew what was happening, and they weren't excited going into camps. And now there is. They are excited about going into camps. It's something different. It's a different atmosphere. The smiles on the faces. And look, if guys are smiling and things are going well, it's all great and when it's all rosy. But it's when the defeats happen. Look at last week. Okay, wasn't a great performance. Look, we're bullied by the English, but we're still just starting off in Andy Farrell's tenure. He's got to be given that time to change it around, to bring in different players, for all these guys to get used to his systems, for Mike Catt to show a little bit more attacking prowess than we have seen. And this weekend is certainly be a great one. But yeah, all the feedback coming out of the camp is that they're very, very positive about how things are and excited about the future.
Yeah. Jimmy, I know you're involved in a great cause, St. Francis Hospital. It's close to your heart. Aviva Ireland are doing an awful lot of work. The campaign at the moment is for people to get involved by donating €6 to St. Francis Hospice for the Tree for Life. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, certainly, absolutely. I'm only delighted to be involved with this St. Francis Hospice. And as you mentioned, my mum was there last year, and she was there for a month, and just to see... words can't express about what these people do in there. You know, they're just unbelievable people, and the volunteers and people who are paid to do it as well. It's just the comfort that they provide, and look, no one wants to be in a situation where a family member gets put into it, but it's such an essential service that they provide, you know, and it makes such a big difference. So they have two hospices. They have one in Raheny and one in Blanchardstown, and each year they have a big 20-foot tree that they put up, and you buy you sponsor a light and it goes up, and you can remember a loved one and think about them. And it's just a nice thing to do, but obviously with certain situations there at the moment, that it's gone to virtual. So Aviva have been great and come in to sponsor, so it's a great opportunity for people just to make a difference, and certainly does make a difference. And I understand that, like, it's been a massively difficult year for charities across the board, but you know, these people really need it, and this money comes in and benefits everyone, you know, and it benefits people that are sick and that need that care. And as I said, there is nothing, like, they're remarkable people. They're nearly saints in how they go about it. And to see, as I mentioned, my mum in there and how she was treated, and the care and support, and I would do anything I could to help them in any way I can, you know. And it's just an unbelievable cause, and if people can get behind it and buy a light and sponsor a light in the tree, it's only €6, and you can find it on Aviva's website and or St. Francis Hospice.
Brilliant.
But it is a superb course.
Yeah, Jimmy, we'll tweet that out as well and try to get as much support as we can for a brilliant hospice. As always, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Mind yourself, and we'll chat soon. Quick break, and we're back chatting soccer, the great Diego Maradona. 2FM.
with Green Farm. Snack smart with Green Farm's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on, football.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara alongside Dunica O'Callaghan. We are going to continue by reflecting further on the death, which was announced yesterday, of the legendary Diego Maradona, who passed away at the age of 60. And so much has been, there's some phenomenal stuff, Dunica, on social media over the last 24 hours, just in terms of clips and iconic bits of commentary. And actually, as we speak, there's pictures on the TV here of his body lying in state in Buenos Aires, and the crowd flooding past. And Napoli today confirming that they're looking to press on with renaming their stadium in his honour. So a man whose legacy will live long.
Absolutely. And I suppose, you know, we're the same vintage. At that age, 86, that World Cup, it was just incredible. Just how he nearly leapt out of the screen, didn't he?
He was phenomenal. And one man who had an opportunity to see Maradona, not necessarily the footballer, but Maradona the man, at very close quarters, is John Smith, who football fans may be familiar with, described in many quarters as a super agent, the author of a great book called The Deal, which gives insight into the world of the agent. And delighted to say that John is with us now. John, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sad, but I'm good. Thank you.
Can I ask you, we've seen the iconic clips, the goals against England in 86, the warm-up routines, the phenomenal natural talent that Diego Maradona had. But in terms of the tributes to, if I can say, Diego rather than Maradona, because they're two very different entities, what has struck you most about some of the memories about the man himself that have been shared over the last 24 hours?
Well, actually, what you've said is really interesting, because he was exactly that. He was nearly two people in one body. The personal time I had with him, he was little Diego. I'm 5'8", so he was one of the few people that I dealt with in the sporting world smaller than me. And he was just a lovely boy from the slums of Buenos Aires who never forgot that. And then when he crossed that white line and he walked onto the pitch, he became Maradona. And Maradona had this intense belief that he had a God-given talent, and he had to work that talent, and he had to play that talent. And he felt it was a kind of divinity, really. I mean, it was as strong as that. And so that's why he did everything to win. I mean, I used to see him in training, and if he scored any goal, even a tap-in, in a training game, he'd be celebrating like he'd scored another goal in the World Cup. It was quite intense to watch. But he did have a remarkable talent. I mean, absolutely remarkable talent. So I guess when you have that much talent, it's very difficult to just leave it on the pitch.
Mm. I've been reading quite a bit about him over the last 24 hours, and the one thing that has struck me time and time again is that we have a man who left his native Argentina to go to Barcelona. People will say it didn't quite work out for him there, but then you move it on to his time at Napoli, the two league titles, the World Cup in 86, that he was a man who came from very little, who lifted a country of a similar standing to the very top of the world stage, and did likewise in the city of Naples, who hadn't had any history of success in advance of his arrival. And I'm wondering, for Diego the man, as much as Maradona the footballer, how much of his motivation or how much of his drive was to do that, to maybe mirror his own success in terms of, you know, taking working class people, working class clubs, working class cities to the very top?
Again, it's quite an insightful comment that you've made, because one of the reasons, I guess, that he was fairly left leaning politically, if you look at his geopolitical ambitions, the times he spent with Fidel Castro, the times he spent with the Pope, everything was geared towards trying to help the unfortunates in the world, and he felt he could identify with people who stood by the working classes. I mean, I make no particular comment about it, just it's just an observation. But his effect on southern Italy, not just Naples, We said southern Italy was the poor relative in that country. Northern Italy was the powerhouse. And during his time there, the emotion and the focus that got put into that part of that country attracted investment. It attracted people with corporate ambition who wanted to be part of this Maradona circus. So really was quite impactful, both on and off the field.
John, just on that, lifting a nation in Argentina in a region like Naples, we talk now about player welfare, but the expectations on him off the pitch, you were around him. Can you give us insight what it was like for him just day to day? We've seen it in the documentary, but just your take on how stressful a life it was off the pitch.
Well, I don't want to be critical of him. I want to remember his memory. And so please excuse me if this sounds critical. It's not overly intended to be. And it's only a social but. He was a lovely guy. And I know some people here in England don't particularly think so. And, you know, he had his negatives too, obviously. But being a nice guy, he found it very difficult to say no. So the frustration for us working with him was that very often you'd get to the house in Naples for a meeting and there'd be 35 other people there. And they were all in his ear and they were all trying to advise and do and be and or hang on. And he found it very difficult to actually knock them away. And sadly, when the real bad boys came knocking, he couldn't knock them away either. So the stresses, in answer to your question, were somewhat brought on by himself or somewhat exacerbated by himself. As an individual, when he walked off of the field, he was that little boy, and he wanted to just enjoy life. And he enjoyed me taking him into London because in London he could breathe a bit of oxygen. I mean, he loved Naples, but the emotional bubble that he lived in was a huge goldfish tank. So he kind of managed it as well as he could, but then he brought all this excessive amount of people with him. And that's when it became really difficult.
I don't want to attribute things to Maradona. You can set me straight, but is it a jump then to suggest that maybe the football pitch, those 90 minutes of relative isolation when he wasn't being targeted the way he was, that they were the moments where he found some form of peace?
Yeah, I'm going to sound sycophantic to you guys in a minute because this is the third time in this short interview I'm going to say that. That's an insightful comment. Yes, is a simple answer to that. That was his heaven. Yes.
How did you first come to work with him? Because I would imagine, I think you had the entire England team at one point, which might have been quite the difficulty post that World Cup in 86. And you obviously were heavily involved with the early stages of the Premier League. But it's not every man who manages to sign a client like Maradona.
Yeah, I was fortunate in my world that I had the England football team and I became reasonably friendly with Murdoch and the Sky team as we launched the Premier League, and I had Diego Maradona in my orbit as well. Actually, it was followed by, because of the amount of publicity I got over Diego Maradona, I managed to get myself close to Mikhail Gorbachev as he left power as well, and that was an interesting
as you do
to work with. Yeah, but I met Diego through Ozzy Ardiles, the then Tottenham footballer, who Diego had some personal issues, and he felt that Ozzy was like his mentor, his friend, his brother, his father, and he phoned one day when I happened to be in Ardiles's house having tea. And he wanted Ozzy to help him, and Ozzy would do because he was his friend. And I just happened to be there, and Ozzy asked me to tag along, and I did. And that was, had I not have been there for tea. And the funny thing is that particular meeting with Ardiles, we'd postponed it twice. So if I'd gone on either of the two original occasions, I wouldn't have met him. So it was complete fate.
Can I ask you, as someone who obviously worked so closely with him and had an insight into the real man, we you know, one of the most famous pieces of Irish sporting television is Jimmy McGee's commentary on the goal in 86 and just the utterance of different class as he worked his way down the field. And so many of these moments have been reshared. His autobiographies, which are, there are multiple autobiographies at this stage, obviously they are one side of a story, but something like Asif Kapadia's documentary from a couple of years ago, do you think that something, you know, a cultural artifact like that does great justice to the complexity of Diego the man and Maradona the footballer? How is that as an enduring legacy?
I quite like that documentary. In fact, I was in it. Except I finished up on the cutting room floor.
I think you're in pretty good company there, because by all accounts there was they could have had multiple editions of what is a, in excess of a 2-hour documentary.
They'd probably go back and look over it now.
Yeah. But I thought that did it. I thought it was good, because there were layers and layers around. By the time we'd finished with all the people and all the influences, there were layers around Diego, and I think that they stripped away some of those and reported the ones that were relative to the subject. Look, I mean, the man's legacy, I think history will be kind to him. He had some dark corners. He shone an enormously bright light onto the sporting world. And I think as time goes by, and, you know, as we've said previously, I don't know too many geniuses that aren't flawed. So you look at a John Lennon or an Elvis Presley or a George Best. There are two sides of those coins. Extraordinary talent, and when you kind of exhaust that moment, you keep looking for other things, and sometimes you take blind alleys. But I think history will look back and say, and I might be wrong here, guys, but I don't know anyone who was or is or will be for a while maybe the any kind of better footballer on this planet. The things that I saw him doing, silly things like, so I saw him in training playing keepy uppy, which is not easy at the best of times, for maybe 10 minutes while signing autographs. Wow. I mean, ridiculous things like that. A huge talent. Just the ball and he were just a magical entity.
John, can I ask you, and I don't want to get overly philosophical, but just before we let you go, like, you've worked with Maradona, I know you worked with Paul Gascoigne as well, you mentioned George Best. Aside from the football, do the experiences and the global exposure of the ups and downs that somebody like Maradona had, how much has that changed how footballers are looked after, behaved, seen as individuals now, compared to maybe the more commercial or brutish entities that they might have been seen in some quarters in decades gone past?
Yeah, it's all part of a sort of evolution. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that football is a sport, but it's also now it's an industry. But it's only been an industry really since the Premier League began to market itself globally in the early 90s. So it's a junior industry by comparison to other entertainment forms. And it attracted, because of the amount of money, it attracted some unsavory or not qualified, shall we say, characters. It is beginning, it has begun over the last few years to be much better. I mean, the lessons of Diego are just part of the evolution of how football now manages itself. And I'm proud to say and pleased to say that I think the Premier League has proven to be a good staging post for that, and an probably the biggest entertainment, I'm going to say this even though it's on your show, the biggest entertainment apart from sex on our planet.
We'll let you away with that. We've said worse than that ourselves. John,
do that on the breakfast show.
Well, there you go. John, I can only imagine the demands on your time over the last 24 hours and how difficult it is to relive the memories of someone with whom you were so close. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for being with us on the programme once again.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your time.
That's John Smith with us there. So, yeah, we will never see his likes. That documentary, I just think, is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Dunica, I know, again, we're pressed slightly for time, but even just the insight, the fact that there was a designated camera crew following him around, filming him, so that all of those behind-the-scenes moments, and even the bit in the documentary where he's about to have his ankle operated on, and the camera crew are there as the knife is plunged into his ankle, it's mental stuff. You wouldn't have allowed that now into the Beacon or wherever else you were, the sports surgery clinic up in Santry.
But even the insight there from John about him doing keepy uppies while signing autographs, you know, not wasting a moment. I think there's so many of those brilliant clips. You can go down a rabbit burrow at the moment and it's just pure heaven of his talent, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the way to be. And at least those clips will live on. We've much more to come on the programme. We're going to go stateside with Shep in a couple of minutes, and we're going to look ahead to Dundalk's latest Europa League game after the break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Do it.
Play the game. The sound.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So there's an 8 o'clock kickoff at the Aviva Stadium in Group B of the UEFA Europa League. Dundalk in action at home to Rapid Vienna. It's half time in the game between Malda and Arsenal. They're scoreless at the minute. Dundalk at the bottom of the table. No points from their opening three games. Rapid Vienna, their win over Dundalk, their only points so far. Conan Byrne is with us. Conan, we look at the performance. Dundalk will feel very unlucky not to have come out with something in one of the most bizarre games that we've seen in the Europa League this year, last time out. But they will take heart from that about the potential of hopefully getting their first points of the campaign tonight.
Good evening, Damien. Yes, they will, of course. Scoring three goals away from home in the Europa League is a huge feat for any team. And for Dundalk to go over to Austria and score three goals was a great feat. Having said that, their downfall has been their defensive line over the last number of months, especially the goalkeeping area. And it's been an issue for most of the season. There's been no consistency. The mistakes are proven costly. They're not getting away with the mistakes that they're making, whereas sometimes if a goalkeeper makes a mistake, the defender is there to clear the danger. But unfortunately, it hasn't been. And I thought it was, being totally honest with you, I thought it was wrong to play Aaron McCary in the last game in Vienna, just throwing him into the deep end. I thought it was a poor decision, like due to the lack of sharpness, I suppose, and match practice that Aaron had. He was going into a game where Rapid Vienna would be peppering Dundalk's goal. I thought it was a poor choice to just put him in there when a goalkeeper likes to be eased into games, trying to gain a bit of confidence early doors, and it just didn't work. And Gary Rogers is going to be back between the sticks this evening, I'm sure.
Yeah, he is actually. The team news is just in. Rogers in goal, Cleary, Boyle, Hoare across the back, Shields and Sloggin in the holding roles, Dumigan and Gannon out wide, Duffy, Kolovic and Macmillan, the front three. I know there's obviously a financial aspect to getting points in this tournament. Just from a matter of pride, it just has to be about getting something out of these remaining games, doesn't it?
It does, and I think they have to realise where they're playing tonight as well at the Aviva Stadium. It's their second appearance this season after beating Key 3-1 in the Europa League qualifying round to get them here. But they're up against it, Damien. The three teams that they're up against are really, really strong teams, European teams. Rapid Vienna, 32 Austrian titles. Actually, they've a really bit of interesting history. They've actually won a league in their own country while under occupation by a foreign empire. They won in the German League as well in 1941, and that's not a lot of teams have done that. Dynamo Kiev, Dynamo Tbilisi, and our own Derry City have done likewise. But Rapid Vienna reached the final of the Cup Winners' Cup twice in 84, 85, and 95, 96. But these are teams that Dundalk are pipped against are really, really strong. And players talked about it during the week. Darren Cleary mentioned it, Sean Gannon mentioned it, that they need to be tight at the back. They need to ensure that they keep it tight for the opening half. Don't let crosses come into the box. Most importantly, stay on your feet to prevent fouls in or around the penalty area, because that's where Rapid are really, really dangerous. And then on the counter to that, then they have to break at speed. Duffy was Michael Duffy was absolutely superb against Bohemians in the FAI Cup quarter final on Friday. Sorry to say that, Damien. And he was absolutely unstoppable. And when he's in that form, there's not many players that can stop him. And with Dave McMillan now in the team, he doesn't have to worry about Pat Hooban challenging him for that position, considering that he's out for the season with ankle surgery. And I thought he was excellent on Friday as well. Quality and hold up. He's actually scored 4 goals in his last 2 starts. And with Kolovic, as you say, in there as well, Slokket and Shields in front of the back three, Dumigan has come into his own recently over the last number of weeks, and he's been really good. They need to make sure their counter-attacking play is as effective as their defensive lineup.
Colin, we're going to have to head stateside to join Jeff Shepherd really shortly, so we're going to get you to call it. Who do you think will come out on top tonight?
Yeah, it's going to be very, very difficult. Donica, Christoph Kasmuller's 4 goals and his 3 starts in the league, and then we saw Dejan Ljubicic scoring in the side's previous meeting with that ferocious shot from all of 35 yards. Right, I'm going to call it 3-1 Rapid.
Oh, very good. Conan, as always, thank you so much. We'll catch you soon. Quick break, and we're heading stateside to join Jeff Shepherd on Thanksgiving.
Are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
The man open left.
Game on, Iron America.
Yeah, time to head stateside where our American friends are celebrating Thanksgiving, and who better to join than our great teammate Jeff Shepherd. Shep, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys, or as we say in your part of the world, happy Thursday.
Well, it's actually Toy Show Eve over here at the moment, so we have that high of being thankful for certain things. Jeff, how are you celebrating the day?
Well, in traditional, you know, the American experience, I will be eating myself into a nap and, you know, spending some time with some family. And then, you know, probably having several adult beverages until I pass out. And then, more than likely, we'll get up and do a smaller version of that for dinner. Now, so it really is just everything you need.
This is, so it's Thanksgiving. For listeners who have heard maybe you and I and other people on the radio over the last couple of years, it's also Happy Turducken Day.
Turducken?
Oh, Donica, yes. Donica, you would love turducken. So let me see if I can get this right now. It is a boned duck inside a boned chicken inside a boned turkey, and then it's cooked and served on Thanksgiving. Am I right, Chip?
That's right, yes. It's the chicken inside a duck inside a turkey, and then there's also stuffing and dressing in there as well.
It's 5 meals
and
in one.
Yes, I mean, and that, it's really more about efficiency at this point. I mean, it's how quickly can you get that many calories into your system? You know, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I would think it's probably the second or third most important invention America's ever given to the world. Yeah. You know, you've got the automobile, and then maybe the iPhone, and then I think the turducken in that order.
I'm afraid now for people that want to enjoy Turducken Thursday with Shep, Damien and Dunica are going to have to subscribe to our podcast on all good podcast platforms. There is an expectation, I am told by the powers that be, that we actually talk about sport, so I presume we best move on. This as well has been a significant day for cardiac units in hospitals around North America. It's also one of those great days of tradition in the NFL, and it's, you know, for a world where everything is now dictated by the TV networks, it's great to see that a little bit of tradition lives on in terms of where the football is on today and what teams get to host home matches on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so traditionally you've got the Detroit Lions who open up football, and they'll be they kicked off at 11:30 this morning, and they're taking on the Texans. An interesting matchup there. You've got two coaches who could potentially, you know, be losing their jobs for a variety of reasons. I mean, Romeo Crennel in Houston is an interim head coach, and Matt Patricia in Detroit just seems to be a bad head coach. And then you've got the Dallas Cowboys always host the afternoon game, and this year they're going to be taking on the Washington professional football team, fittingly on Thanksgiving, and we'll just let all the subplots, you know, you guys can do the math from there. They're going to be playing each other, and really just a putrid division of football in the NFC East, where you know, typically, guys, you're going to have to win 8-9 games at a minimum to be your division champ. You know, some teams are, some divisions, you have to win 11 or 12 games. 5 wins might get you the NFC East this year. It is unbelievably bad this year, so I don't really think we need to spend much time on that game. The interesting thing that's happened in the last 24 hours is you are going to have a big matchup between the Baltimore Ravens and the 10-0 Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, that game has now been moved to Sunday because of a COVID outbreak across the Baltimore facility. It seems like a staffer on the Baltimore Ravens, in the Baltimore Ravens organization, played a little fast and loose with the COVID rules, and 5 or 6 players have now been infected. And so they are pushing the game back to Sunday because they think they may be out of that window that some, you know, more players would be eligible to play. But, I mean, just last week, I mean, literally a couple of hours after their game on Sunday, they declared that Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, the two running backs for the Ravens, were positive with the virus, and they played on Sunday. So it's crazy, but this game is now getting moved to Sunday because of the COVID-19 protocols.
Just on that, they're on a bit of a run, aren't they? Pittsburgh and 10-0.
Yeah, Donner. So, you know, there's been one team that's ever gone undefeated through an entire season, the 1972 Miami Dolphins. Of course, the Patriots a couple of years ago were undefeated into the Super Bowl, and the only game they lost was the Super Bowl that year. They went 18-1. And so the Steelers are, you know, if you could imagine a quiet 10-0, that's what the Steelers are right now. I mean, it's not like they're being in these discussions of, like, greatest team of all time. They're just quietly going about their business and beating everybody. Some games they kick a bunch of field goals, some games they throw for 500 yards, some games they rush for 200 yards. They're doing a little bit of everything, and they're just, that's kind of the Steeler way. I mean, it really is just an unbelievable franchise that just has a history of winning. And here they are again. Mike Tomlin has done it once again. They're 10-0. I think they've already locked up a playoff spot, or they can with a win this weekend. So we'll see. They haven't had any problems with Baltimore in their earlier matchup this year, but they typically play good football games against each other.
Just looking at it, I did a thing last week for the RTE website about books of the year, and I don't know, have you read The Dynasty by Jeff Benedict? It's about the New England... it's just a phenomenal book about the Patriots and the history of the Patriots and everything else. And I'm looking at, like, injuries are really going to cost them this year, and it's inconceivable for a lot of people that they're not going to make the playoffs, but that looks how it's going to pan out. They like an awful lot of teams, missing an awful lot of key players.
Well, right. So they had injuries, and then they also had several players opt out at the beginning of the season, you know, where they said, we don't want to play this year because of COVID. And I think they were really impacted by the opt-out more than a lot of things. And I don't know what Tom Brady read in the tea leaves, but he knew that it was time to get out of town. And, you know, we've talked on this show before about kind of the standoff between me and Bill Belichick about who needs the other one the most and trying to win without the other one, you know, on the sideline. And so they have not been very good offensively. They just don't have a lot of weapons. Cam Newton's doing okay. You know, he's missed a couple of games as well because of the Rona. But, yeah, they are clearly not the franchise right now that they have been for the last 2 decades, which has been the model of, you know, professional sports in North America.
Shep, your own Saints, they're flying high at the moment.
Yeah, they are. They, you know, beat the Falcons last week, and, you know, Drew Brees is injured. He has, you know, I'm not sure exactly how it is in Ireland, but over here in the States, you know, humans have, 32 ribs, I think is what it is. And he's got 11 broken ones or 22 broken ones, some unbelievable amount of broken ribs and punctured lungs. And I mean, just all kinds of stuff going on. So he's out. Taysom Hill has been named the quarterback, and they beat the Falcons pretty handily this past Sunday. And they now sit atop the NFC. It's them and the Packers vying for the top spot. And the reason why that's important this year, guys, is because the NFL expanded the playoff picture. There are now 7 teams in each conference that make the playoffs. So Pittsburgh would be the first team in the AFC. The Saints right now are the first team in the NFC. And those are the only 2 teams that get a bye in the playoffs. Traditionally, the top 2 teams have gotten an off week, but not anymore. It's just the top seed. So it is incredibly important to finish with the top record in your conference this year.
Just before we move on and talk about one or two, I want to touch on the Golden State Warriors in the NBA. I'm fascinated by the fact that this weekend, or today, the player of the match, the man of the match, gets either a turkey leg award or a replica WWF belt. Sorry, WWE. I'm showing my age.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, every game that'll be played today, you know, and think about it. I mean, you've got television announcers and camera people and, you know, sound people, you know, all of the people that actually make the television event happen. Well, they're all away from their families as well. And so the networks will typically cook, you know, a couple of turkeys for everybody to eat before the game and after the game. And I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, I think it was John Madden. He started handing out turkey legs to the player of the game. And so it's just a tradition that has kind of caught on now. And I think one of the networks gives out an award called the Gobbler. And like you said, it kind of looks like a, you know, it's like a WWE belt or, you know, trophy or something like that. I mean, look, it is the greatest American holiday.